Hi, middle-aged gamers, welcome back to another episode of your favorite middle-aged gaming show, the show for gamers just like yourselves. Today, we're a little bit late, so we're going to jump straight into the news stories first, and there is a bunch of news, some very relevant, some a little bit relevant, but things you'll want to listen to, plan for the future. Today, let's first jump into Adam's story first, because Adam, some very pressing stories. I thought maybe you might want to talk about your E3 story first, Adam.
Sure, so we can just hop right in, and let me just pull that up. All right, so my first story is E3, so it looks like a lot of different companies are unfortunately going to be pulling out of E3. So right now, what we have is, we already knew that Sony, Nintendo, Xbox, and Ubisoft were not going to be there. However, Sega and Tencent have recently announced that they also will not be there. So that just means that we have, what, all three major consoles and a major publisher, Ubisoft. Sega is not quite as big, but still pretty big. And Tencent's obviously huge these days. So the fact that a lot of these people or groups are not coming, there's been some speculation as to, A, is it even worth having an E3? And B, will there even be an E3? And if so, in what form? So that's basically the entire news.
The story I saw this morning, like Ed and I both saw it, but the story I saw it is like there's not going to be an E3. That was a definitive speculation. Again, emphasis on speculation, because they mentioned, I guess we all know this, right? Is that E3's figuratively been dead for a while. They said like the summer games show hosted by Jeff Keighley is like the definitive games show of the year these days. So I'm expecting that they'll just like, the organization behind E3 will just be like, yep, this is not making financial sense anymore. And I don't know what Antoine thinks as well. It's just like, we've seen the layout with tech companies and other organizations continue to keep going. I think no matter who you are, Microsoft laid off people, Facebook laid off people, Activision, Blizzard has laid off a few people as well. So I think everyone's cost conscious this year. And it makes more sense to hold your individual events online like Nintendo's been doing, because at the end of the day, it's like people prefer to watch online. Geeks prefer to watch online from the safety in their home, in their PJs. What do you think, Antoine?
I think it's sad. Just try to remember our childhood when it was E3, Los Angeles, and you had like massive drops, like fantastic news, like tense each show, each year. It was the major stuff, and the video game world was revolving around E3. And then you had the pandemic, and the pandemic made the E3 extremely boring by having like these different conferences on Twitch. And some of them were, you would sleep through, literally. It was really annoying. Sometimes you had because last year you would watch it because you wanted to see Breath of the Wild 2. Or something that you were expecting, and see, we talked a lot about Dead Space and things, but as you said, we don't need a big show like E3 to have this news anymore, and especially not virtually. If it doesn't make sense if it's not on a big conference center and it's a big American show with fireworks and cheerleader and the over-the-top kind of concept. If it's just a very poor, boring thing on Twitch, scrap it. Scrap it. It doesn't make anyone dream it.
What do you think, Adam?
I'm disappointed too. A few years ago, my wife was saying like, oh, they have these big conventions and stuff. Why don't you ever go? And I said, well, maybe we could go one time. And she was like, if you could choose, which one would you want to go to? Which one would you want to go to? And I said, I want to go to E3 because that's the big one. That's where they show all the games off. That would be the one that I would pick. And literally that year was the one where all the major consoles started dropping out. And it's kind of high. She was like, okay, because at that time she was like, all right, let's go one year. And then later on she's like, oh, you had that thing, do you want to go? And I was like, nah, all the big ones aren't going to be there's no point. And it's just continuously stayed that way. Yeah, it seems like it's everything's, like you said, online these days. And I think a lot of times now people are talking about, was it the Xbox, what was the one that they had recently? I don't remember what it's called. And Sony has State of Play. Nintendo has Nintendo Direct, but they all have their own. And I think now then people want to do that more for a couple of reasons. Probably one of them is less direct competition, because we would always have who won E3. And I think for some publishers and stuff like that, that could be kind of like degrading if it's, you put all this effort into all your things and then Nintendo comes out with the Breath of the Wild and then everyone's like talking about that and you're like, nobody's talking about us anymore. So I think there was a lot of pressure to outperform other groups. And I think, what was it? Was it at E3 where the PS4 and the Xbox 360, where the Xbox One was announced, and Xbox said they weren't going to, or the way they weren't going to share games, everything was going to be like locked to your console. And Sony was like, this is how you share games with your friends. And they just pass a box to somebody else. I think that was at E3, right? So I think there was a lot of pressure that you have to outperform everybody. Whereas when you do your own event, you get 100% of the attention and you control the news cycle, at least until somebody else does their event. And if nobody does their event for another 2 or 3 weeks, you're basically guaranteed 2 or 3 weeks of being the focus. So I think it makes a lot of financial sense and business sense to pull out of something like E3. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I think that's enough for that. Let's move on to Antoine's story. Antoine, you want to talk about Resident Evil 4 Remake?
Yes, exactly. So as you may well know, it's released 4 days ago on March 24th. And it is fantastic and stunning. The remakes since 2 and 3 got a lot of very good critics for acclamation. The only issue I see was that it was too short for Army 3. I think you could finish it in 5 hours. Some places. In the 4, I think you need at least 12 to finish it. And just if you don't know the Resident Evil saga, the 4th is one of the most, if not the most iconic, back in 2005, released originally in 2005. It was absolutely fantastic. Everybody was talking about. So we are really waiting to see, will the remake shorten it and degrade it? And are they going to destroy a legend or something like this? And no, they respected the legend very well, because this kind of a game that you played over and over since 2005, so you can't just make it, just can't repeat exactly as it was. They adapted it a bit, of course, and it's really well made. So just for the story, you follow Leon S. Kennedy that you saw in Resident Evil 2. Yeah, he was a cop in the first day at the city police department. What a first day. And after that, became a kind of an agent, a secret agent for the US. And in Resident Evil 4, is dispatched in, I think, Spain to retrieve the daughter of the American president, Ashley. I'm sure you heard the meme online somewhere, like it. That's where it's coming from. But anyway, that's the pitch of the game. And I found the first part of the game really took inspiration from the latest Resident Evil Village, especially the very first part. It's, as you can see, it's beautiful. It is remade. I really advise you to play this game. It's a really good remake, and I wish more very good remake could be made like this.
I'm going to pass that back on to Adam, because I have never played Resident Evil.
I would say that the marketing for this has been amazing. Anybody that remembers when Resident Evil Village came out, they had the village puppets. And so it would always start off as this cute Sesame Street looking thing. And it would turn into these, they'd start like ripping each other apart. And it would just be like, it's just this really, it's in the concept is really horrifying. But because it's done with puppets, it's just so funny. And the marketing for this one was they released these short little, maybe 2 or 3 minute anime clips of just random stories of them. And Leon just always has a big smile on his face. And he's just, oh, hi, everybody. And this, and then just horrible things happen to him. He dies at the end of every single video. And the last one, he dies twice, because after he dies, his ghost gets hit by a helicopter. So it's just ridiculous. So whoever does the marketing at Capcom, you guys are
doing good.
Yeah, no, you guys deserve a raise. You guys are just, whoever comes up with that is just amazing. But yeah, Resident Evil 4 changed the formula quite a bit. That was the one that got rid of the tank controls. It got rid of a fixed camera. So it changed up the formula from Resident Evil quite a bit. But it's also the one where Resident Evil kind of switched a little bit further away from what we would consider like a traditional horror game and a little bit closer to almost an action game. There were still horror elements for sure. But this seems to be common in a lot of the horror genre, where you start off as a horror game. Dead Space, you had the same thing with Dead Space 3. You start off as this horror game, you're in these enclosed things, but you always ramp it up. And then at a certain point, you get to the point where it's like, okay, slow zombies aren't creepy anymore. Now it has to be fast, and we're not being freaked out by these monstrosities anymore because we see them all the time. And then there's this kind of natural progression from horror game to action game. So this was the one that kind of took it more in that direction. But it has been very successful, and it got a 10 out of 10, I think, for a lot of reviews. A lot of people are saying that a 9 out of 10. A lot of people are saying that this is going to be a big contender for Game of the Year, despite being a remake, would be interesting because a remake's never won Game of the Year before, so we'll see.
And I was seeing 93 out of 100 for a Metacritic.
Yeah.
Which is very good.
Yeah, it's been getting really good reviews.
Let me pose a question to you guys, because I was thinking about this yesterday or one of the days this week. I've been looking at games to buy games on Switch, and I was like, yeah, I just realized, like, way back in the day, I realized I'll probably never, ever play a game DLC again. I think this was after Bioshock Infinite released, and I purchased the DLC. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. I love Bioshock Infinite. I finished it, and I bought the DLC with the season pass, and I never played it. And I just realized today, after I saw Anton's story, I'm like, I'm never going to play a remake just because there's too much stuff, too much cheap stuff, combined with Kickstarter, combined with a Switch, and a MacBook and a PC and everything. And I just, do middle-aged gamers have time to play remakes? That's my question.
Absolutely.
Yes, that depends if the remake is well done or not. Ask Adam Rusik, he really enjoyed Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Now, nostalgia is a powerful beast.
But what makes you choose to play a remake over the deluge of new games that are coming out every month?
For me, it's partially nostalgia, but also being able to experience. The thing about a remake that's really interesting is if you can go back and you can play an old game, your brain obviously remembers it not exactly as it was sometimes, and sometimes it can actually be hard to go back. But when you do play a remake, if it's done well, it plays the way you remember it, not the way it actually was. But it also adds and can expand on the game in new ways. That was one thing in Final Fantasy VII Remake. One thing that, you know, people didn't look were some of the changes that they've made, such as adding the whole thing of the fates and things that are going to change the story. Those weren't very well received. Things that added to the story, however, like, for instance, I think it was Chapter 4 or something like that, where you get this mission with Biggs, Wedge, and Jesse. Those were pretty universally loved because they expand the lore rather than change it. It doesn't change anything you already know. It's just we're going to give you a little bit more, and you're going to spend more time with these characters. If you haven't seen your family for a long time and you go back, you've seen these people for a big chunk of your life. Why would you want to go back and see those people again? Why don't you want to make and hang out with new friends? Of course you want to go out with your family. But then when you go with your family, you still want to do new things together, right? You don't want to just do the same things you've always done. Let's go see a new movie we haven't seen or something like that. Let's have a new experience with old friends. And I think that's the appeal of remakes.
Also, at this time, remember, it was quite a while ago. We were Resident Evil 4, 2005, so imagine Legion before. You don't necessarily have the console to play when you're a kid. So just right now, and I replayed the Halo, playing the Halo 1 from 2001 was terrible because there wasn't actually an anniversary version, and even this one was... So if you want to play as an adult on the fantastic series you missed as a kid, it's really hard to play an original game. So now you have these remakes, which are beautiful with 2D graphics, with 2D gameplay, because the time control, that's literally heavy to play. So it's also very good for middle-aged gamers who didn't get to play these games because you don't have the right gear or at the time or something like this. So I think it's really good.